Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right. Three podcasts, 3 weeks.
I'm a jack of all trades. You know that?
You really are. It's pretty breathtaking to watch. You're an art dealer.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, I sold a piece of art last week to a certain human being that will remain nameless just because I value my clients, Caitlin. but I did facilitate a bit of an art deal last week.
Are you at all able to disclose the artist?
Yes, it's actually one of Racket Magazine's cover girls. Let's call her that.
Cover artist.
Well, I like to call her cover girl because she's amazing. So I just wanted to up her status there. Okay. But she is definitely one of the cover artists for Racket Magazine. And of course, it is the one and only wonderful Deborah Roberts.
Deborah Roberts, issue number 10. I got this, the piece of art that we commissioned from her was in homage to Venus Williams. She is a collage artist. She's great. And she has gotten very popular. She is actually name-checked in a weekend New York Times article about how athletes are becoming art collectors.
Yes.
And Deborah Roberts is one of the artists they collect.
Yeah.
Thanks maybe to you.
No,
and maybe
definitely.
To us.
I had nothing to do with that in the New York Times. I certainly had nothing to do with her collaboration with the NBA. But yes, jack of all trades, art dealer now, consultant. I consider myself that.
And you sold a piece of art on behalf of Deborah Roberts to a tennis player.
To an athlete.
Okay, we're just going to say an athlete.
Yes. Anyway, so that was kind of fun to be a part of because I friggin' love Deborah Roberts' art so much. And quite frankly, if I had the money, I would definitely be buying one of her pieces and putting it on my wall. So if you have the money, do yourself a favor. Go and buy one of Deborah Roberts' pieces because you will not regret it. What else?
Speaking of art, we had a piece up last week featuring the new work that Honor Titus, another cover artist of Racket, I think it was issue 15, he just joined the Gagosian Gallery.
Yes.
He is now a Gagosian artist, which is huge. Had his first show, I believe it sold out with Gagosian this fall. And the ATP commissioned him along with a very cool art collective that my friend Dan and Christina run called Art Child to do a sort of customizable ATP finals poster.
Yeah, it was cool.
Really cool. You could do your own online. There were a couple of different versions. And we posted an interview that Honor did with John McEnroe, who's obviously a very famous art collector,
yes,
art aficionado.
John McEnroe has quite the art collection.
He's got a Basquiat or several.
Oh,
he's
has
got
some
Warhols.
Serious art collection.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing when it comes
yes.
to art, is my understanding.
Yes, yes. Well, he had a bit of an, I think he had an art gallery there for a second as well.
I think he did too,
yeah.
Right on Green Street, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So he's he and I often sort of go back and forth on some art. I don't have his collection, let's put it that way. I actually have a beautiful Dennis Ozen Debe piece on my wall.
That's right, Dennis number issue number 18.
Yeah, look at you just pulling out
the
issue
Saka
left and right,
right,
like you know.
Like
yeah, I have one of Dennis's pieces which I absolutely love, and he's incredible. So yeah, we you know obviously Racket Magazine's done a really great job with getting some amazing artists that are now doing really well, by the way.
Yeah.
And so...
Who will be next? Who will we anoint next?
I don't know.
Yeah. But the interview is up now with John and Honor, who could not be a nicer guy. They sent him to the finals, and he and the athletes were commissioning, like, original works together, printing them on an iPad.
It's cool.
Together, which was really fun. The video is fun. And the interview is really interesting and good. So I was happy to post it up on
our website. I have given Honor a serving lesson. And so that's where my other... You know, jack of all trade things comes in. Coach, art consultant now, TV personality. What can I say?
Excellent barista. You've made me a very delicious cup of coffee in the past.
I'm okay barista, but certainly there are others that are much better than I am, including my girlfriend.
Yeah, Eden is an actual barista.
Yeah, she's a master barista.
A master training.
It's been a good week. Let's get into some tennis. I have to say before we get started, actually, I also appeared on a podcast for those of you that love podcasts. And I always get asked, what's a good podcast? And have you listened to it yet? But you probably haven't listened to it because you've been quite busy lately. But my favorite podcast is called, outside of ours, of course.
Of course.
Is the podcast called I've Had It.
I've Had It.
And it's I've Had It. And it's two very liberal moms from Oklahoma City. And for that in and of itself is quite remarkable that two liberal people come from Oklahoma City. Jennifer and Angie, or as she's commonly known as Pumps. So I was on the episode last Thursday, I think it was. So take a listen to that. It's quite fun, but it's a great podcast. When you get done with ours.
I did listen to it a little bit. You spent some time, little known fact about you, Jack of all trades, you spent some time in Oklahoma City. So you were an actual Midwesterner there for a minute.
I was
between Chicago, where Chicago you lived before Oklahoma New York, City. But also Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Which, not too many Australians in Oklahoma City, I reckon.
No. But I will say this, I did, I do enjoy the people of the Midwest. They make me feel a little bit like Australia. They're very warm and friendly in the Midwest.
You think Australians are also warm and friendly?
Yes, we are very warm and friendly. Okay. That's the first thing people say when they go to people say, everyone's so nice in Australia. I said, yeah, well, you know, we've got universal healthcare. We give a shit about each other. We've got good weather.
Sure.
I mean, even in COVID, we were having a good time. I mean, we had to spend 2 weeks in quarantine in a hotel, but once we got out, we were having a good old time.
Maybe that's why.
Except when the people of the quarantine hotel in Melbourne decided to sleep with the quarantined, quote unquote, people in the hotel rooms.
Oh, that seems sort of counter to the purpose of quarantine, no?
It's big time, considering the security. We're going home at night to their homes in Victoria.
Perfect.
And taking COVID and spreading it all around Victoria, which is why Victoria had literally one of the hardest, outside of China, biggest, hardest lockdowns in the world.
I mean, listen, because there's always going to be
you couldn't travel from Victoria to New South Wales, which is like basically you couldn't travel from New York to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, because
during COVID
blowing it
in Australia because we were having lockdown centrals. But if you were in the other states, you were having a fucking great time, and everyone in Victoria hated everyone else in the country.
Well, good job, hotel guys, I suppose.
Good job, security. That's when it went to the army after that. So
hard pass.
Yeah, anyway,
hard pass. All
right, let's get to the great story of this week, which is of course the just finished ATP finals. What a great tournament it was.
Success.
And as predicted by me on my TV show, when you asked who would win, I said Novak. And I said Sinner was going to have a great week. And I was correct on both fronts.
You were.
And I'm not trying to like make myself out to be an expert or awesome.
I mean, you are an expert, though. I feel like that's not – that's if anything, you're more of an expert at tennis than most people are experts at anything.
Thank you, Caitlin. A lot of people on Twitter or X or whatever the F you want to call this stupid platform now, a lot of people like to – fight with me over my comments.
Let's take a beat and talk about Twitter just for a second, which I won't call it the new thing. I'm going to call it Twitter only. It's done. It's cooked.
I think it's pretty cooked too.
It's awful. I joined in the late 2000s as a journalist at Time magazine, where everyone who was a journalist got scoops, story ideas, shared articles.
It was great.
It was really a media resource. That's what Twitter was initially, I think, intended to be. And
it's a great resource.
It was
news.
A great resource. You could source people's thoughts. You could get a barometer of live events happening in real time, reactions to them. I remember using it when I was covering politics at Time magazine, and we were doing a lot of debate coverage. So you got a sense of how the debate performances during the 2008 election, 2012 election.
It was like the place you went to for news. Totally. I mean, literally, you didn't turn on the TV. You were like, quick, just type in the word whatever.
And all the smartest people in the media universe and some other personalities were talking about germane issues in a largely intelligent way. And through the years, then it became more for jokes. Twitter really lost its intellectual, I think.
I mean, I don't mind a joke here.
No, me neither. I'm not complaining about the transformation.
I like
jokes.
The balance of joke and news.
Yeah, joke and news was still palatable. It was still fun. You had a whole bunch of Twitter comedians who kind of came to perfect their voice on Twitter.
The problem is became a joke. Twitter became a joke.
Twitter became a joke, and that is where it remains, where it's just largely about neckbeard.
It's abusive now.
Tech douches and anybody talking about tennis on Twitter and trying to say something normal or interesting or considered is in the vast minority, and really all you have is people sort of taking shots or saying controversial stuff just to be controversial. It's just, it's completely useless in a way that is, you know, sort of sad for those of us who remember it as a resource, a way to share information, share articles, read articles, figure out what people were talking about. But I find myself never there, and when I am there, quickly sort of grossed out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know me. I like a good fight on Twitter sometimes.
You've gotten better about not fighting on Twitter, so I want to give you
props. I've gotten much better. I wouldn't say I'm better. I'm much better.
Okay.
I do think before I push the send button.
Oh.
Sometimes I write it, and then I delete it.
Okay.
And I say to myself after I do that, well done, Renee.
That's good. Well you done. If you can't recognize your own successes.
I go, Stubbo, you've done well there, just getting rid of that comment.
Nobody needed that.
But there are times where I just have to lay it down sometimes because people write such crap to me sometimes on my responses. Like I did put out a couple of weeks ago, and I know we're going down that rabbit hole, Caitlin.
I
can't help you.
I'm going to monitor this very closely.
Okay, that's fine.
The second
you
goes off track, I'm going to yank it.
You have the rule of the edit.
That's true.
Okay, because you
true.
Edit all of our pieces, all of our
that's
shows.
Right.
But, you know, I'll write something positive about certain players, and they're you know, haters or their, you know, opposition.
Yeah, their detractors.
Detractors or, you know, the people that love another player just absolutely rip me. Mm. And then I'll write something positive about that player and then the other group of players rip me. And I wrote it on Twitter and, you know, then you've got your people like, well, what do you expect? And I'm like, I don't expect anything. All I expect is you have to understand you are seeing things through rose-colored glasses when your favorite player has maybe done something kind of shitty on the court, whether it be Medvedev losing his absolute, you know, mind on the court the other day, or, you know, Novak, you know, egging the crowd on by, like, wanting the boos, and you're just like, dude, like, what are you doing? Or whomever. I mean, the list is long. Rublev, I could go at, you know, who's just a maniac on the court sometimes, but I kind of like his maniac. You know, there are certain players I might say something and then all of a sudden it's like the entire fan base is just, they're not like, oh, you know, okay, we can see it that time, but we love him. And I'm like, hey, guess what? So do I. They can't see it. And so they can't see you are just saying something constructive, considering it's kind of my job as a tennis commentator to make those observations.
Right.
And so then when I say something positive about it, then they're like, you don't even mean it. You're just sucking up now. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, can you guys just be happy?
No. And I'll tell you why. Because the old...
I like your response.
They can't be happy. Because Twitter used to be, as I said, a place for people with some modicum of information to share or some slight authority would be like, hey, this is a more casual way for me to share ideas.
They go for the fight now.
And in the absence of the sort of intelligent level of conversation, it's just literally blood sport. Mm. And it's really, I think,
it's Hunger Games.
It's Hunger Games. And I think what's interesting is I inadvertently tweeted something maybe 5-6 years ago when I first realized that the tide had turned, and I was sort of making a commentary about Rolling Stone and how Rolling Stone, after it had been acquired by Jay Penske, this is like really inside media baseball, but this is what Twitter used to be. It used to be way more inside media baseball because it was a lot of media people.
Yep.
And it was sort of like, oh, interesting. Rolling Stone must have had pretty poor newsstand sales for the past couple of issues because now they've gone back to the well where they put a cover of Taylor Swift with Paul McCartney together. And you were like, oh, well, now they're just going for two
Who's the biggest selling purple?
Yeah. And like, they didn't make any sense together. They didn't do a duet together. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like, oh, hey, sorry, we like experimented with some weird ice cream flavors. Here's like our chocolate and vanilla swirl, you know?
Yeah.
And the point was not to denigrate Paul McCartney or Taylor Swift, who I don't care about in either case, but just to sort of say like, oh, this is an interesting, they must not have had success.
Which is your observation that you're putting
out
there.
As a media person who's been in magazines for the better part of my career, oh, interesting that they're going back to the well, because now here's like, oh, here's like two tried and true cover stars.
Here's very, very, very deep wells.
That doesn't make any sense, except we know it's going to sell. The Taylor Swift Hive
thought
that this was a critique of Taylor Swift. I don't have a single thing to say about Taylor Swift, positive or negative.
Oh, you better be positive about T Swift.
I have nothing to say about her. I just truly, she exists in a different, it's like for people, for me, she's like people who are like Catholic. I'm like, I guess that's a thing and people are really passionate about it.
Now we're going to get the Catholics coming after us.
Jesus, but, literally.
Probably not the word to say on that response.
But anyway, it's just, it's a phenomenon that it's exists outside of me in a way that I'm like, oh,
listen,
wow.
Just so everyone knows, I was brought up Catholic, okay? I just kind of stopped going to church a little bit. Or a lot.
This is the first time I'm hearing about it. I thought you were going to say, listen, everyone, I'm a huge,
you know, when
Swift
I became
fan.
A lesbian, I didn't think it was probably the place that I necessarily was wanted at. Well, but I digress because...
Okay, anyway, so my point is having that immediate insane backlash where I was like, wait, I'm not even talking about your person. What? You guys are just looking for a fight? You guys think you're doing something.
Yeah.
Because you don't have enough of whatever's going on in your life that you get a ton of validation and excitement because you've gone into this online posse where you can swarm and sort of be like, oh, who are we going to fight today about?
Yeah, remember when you said something
Taylor Swift and I was like, oh my God, I inadvertently caught astray from these people and I, what? And I think that's all of Twitter now. Before it was not just that, but now it's all of Twitter. And I actually have to say, I think it's for tennis Twitter, which is a bummer because tennis has so many fun, interesting, cool personalities. It used to be filled with podcasters and, you know, there's still some people saying interesting stuff, but for the most part, I think tennis Twitter is dead.
Yeah,
because
there's no
good faith, interesting exchange of ideas where you can be like, huh, I learned something, or huh, that person has an interesting take on this. I wonder how that other person's going to react. It's just bad faith, pylon, gross posturing.
I mean, listen, I do go back sometimes when I feel like it. Sometimes I don't. I just ignore it. Like I said, I write a lot and then I delete them because I go, is this worth it to me? And that's from your advice, saying, Renee, you're bigger than them. You're more important than them, so don't worry about it.
Well, when you were saying it's your job to commentate and have ideas about tennis, it is, but your job is not on Twitter. Your job is to be bigger than Twitter.
Yes.
And you have been and you will continue to be. And that's what this podcast is. That's what your show is. That's what ESPN is. That's what all this stuff is. Whereas for the most part, this is all a lot of people on Twitter have.
Yeah.
And now they're the only ones left on it.
Sometimes I'm like, why do you follow me? And then they're like, I don't know. I want to see what you're saying so I can like respond to it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, have fun with that. But you're getting blocked.
Blocked.
I've been blocking a lot lately.
That's good.
Yeah.
I will say the old sort of tennis journalists who I used to think were interesting on Twitter now only say sort of quippy things that I wish they would put in their reporting. Mm. Right?
Yep.
I wish I were reading far fewer tweets from tennis journalists and far more material.
Yep.
And that is a rule I have also tried to abide by myself, which is talking about tennis on Twitter way less and just putting effort into podcast, newsletter, content, et cetera, new ideas for new projects, because there's not a lot of return and you're not meeting many new open minds in that way. That's just me.
There's some good ones out there. There's some great people doing some TikTok stuff and things like that. So we want to just shout out to all the people that do really positive, good stuff out there that put out great information on Twitter and, you know, Instagram and on, you know, the TikTok, the old ticky-tocky, that we appreciate you guys because there are some really great ones out there.
For sure.
So, yeah, I've had a couple on my show. So anyway, let's get back to the ATP finals. It was just a great week. I mean, I do want to shout out, I guess, the player of the week that didn't end up picking up the trophy was, in a lot of ways, was Jannik Sinner.
And speaking of tennis Twitter, he got a lot of guff for not tanking. Can you explain that and why that's a stupid take?
Hey, Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, it was something that I did go after on Twitter. I put out a couple of different respective tweets on, you know, the people that are suggesting that he should have tanked his match to Holger Rune to be able to put Rune through to the semifinal and not have Novak go through the semifinal. Just really bothered me a lot because I'm like, first of all, he'd never beaten Holger Rune in his career. He was 0-2. I know you're like, oh, it was two losses. That's big.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about the next gen of great players, those two are in that category of the two players. Once Novak is gone, and Nadal is gone next year, it's like those two will be competing without question for Grand Slams.
For sure.
So why would you tank a match to a guy that you've never beaten when you're playing arguably your best tennis?
Yeah, right.
You're playing at home.
Right.
And it's really important for you to get a win over this guy emotionally. And so, and just for confidence wise, going into the next match, what if they played in the quarters or semifinals of the Australian Open?
Yeah, he's
going to
want
to go into that match going, oh, fuck, I haven't beaten this guy. Oh, but I tanked the last time.
Right.
Holger Rune is not going to know that. He's going to think that you tried. He doesn't know if you necessarily hit that forehand wide on break point, you know? So Holger Rune is going to go into that next match going, I'm 3-0. I know I can beat you. And that's very, very possible that he could have
100%.
Had that person. But now he goes into the next match knowing, shit, the last time I played him, he beat me. And that is a big deal for
and
someone like Jannik Sinner.
That was a very big third set, tough, really pushing each other match. And also, like,
it's at home, too. You think the guy's going to tank a match in Italy?
Also, like, how does one... I realize that there's cheating in tennis. I realize that people throw matches for gambling purposes. I realize that, you know, there's a seedy underbelly. But almost anybody that I think I've ever watched, the idea that they are losing on purpose, especially at a tournament where they've had to bust their ass to get there. If you're in the first round of the French and you're a little injured and you're like, eh, who cares? I'm so far away from home. I haven't been home in a long time. I can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah.
I get why maybe you're not giving your best effort.
Yeah.
But in the semi of a...
Well, at that point, it was the round robin.
Sorry, in the round robin of a top eight player competition, you're going to just phone
you're
it
just
in.
You're just going to lay an egg?
Yeah.
No, it's not going to happen. He's playing at home. He wants to beat a guy he's never beaten. He wants to go into the semifinals. There was no guarantees that he was... What if he loses and plays Alcaraz and loses in the semis?
Right.
There's no guarantees. Clearly, we know those two go at it every time they play. But also, go into the semifinals with tons of confidence, knowing you hadn't lost. There's no guarantees that Novak was going to beat Alcaraz.
Right.
So I think he went into it with the right attitude, which is, I want to win every match. Also, he would have won twice as much money if he'd won the tournament. Everyone's like, well, he lost in the final now, so he didn't win that money. It's like, that's not the point. To be a champion, you have to beat the best. And if you have to beat him twice in 1 week, you have to beat him twice in 1 week.
Although, let's be honest, even Sinner having executed that incredible match against Novak, you got to know when you go up against Novak twice in the same week, it's going to take the match of a lifetime to beat him once.
It's the same thing with what happened with Halep. And, you know, it's funny because I'm trying to think if Darren was coaching Halep at the same time, because Halep beat Serena.
That's right.
In the round robin at the WTA finals. I can't remember where it was.
Was that Singapore?
Maybe in Istanbul? No. Maybe I can't remember. But
and then had to play Doha, her once again.
I don't know. And then she had to play her again. I think it might have been in Istanbul. And then she had to play her again and lost, of course.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, you shouldn't have. Because I think she may have had a similar situation where she could have lost a match and prevented Serena getting in. But I'm like, first of all, a champion's attitude is, now you have the respect of every single top player, knowing that you wouldn't do something like that,
mm-hmm.
that your integrity is there, it's in check, you busted your ass. You played a great semifinal then when you played Medvedev. Now you've got a couple of winning matches against Medvedev, who you didn't have a winning record right. against before. So now every time he goes to play Medvedev, he feels really good about himself. Next time he plays Holger Rune, feels really good about himself.
Right.
When he goes to play Novak next time, he's going to learn a lot from that final. And I have to think that he was probably, no offense, but fucking exhausted
sure.
by the time he got to that
course.
Final as well.
So tough
and Novak
road.
Is so used to...
Yeah.
finishing tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, and if he had tanked to Rune, everyone would have said, oh, if he won the tournament, well, it's because he tanked against Rune. So, you know what? The guy couldn't win either way. I'm proud of him for busting his ass and trying as hard as he could. And Novak was just too good. I mean, Novak taking out Alcaraz and Sinner back-to-back in straight sets.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Didn't look like he was sweating too hard.
I mean,
oof.
So I want to give major props to, you know, Jannik Sinner and his entire team. What a great week. What a great couple of months. Like winning a bunch of tournaments, winning another ATP 1000, going into the ATP finals as one of the favorites and really showing unbelievable form. And let me tell you something. He's going to be really hard to beat in at the Australian Open. And I think this week, even though he lost in the final, will give him so much confidence going into the next Grand Slam. He's going to have a great support in Australia, you know, with his collaboration, obviously, with Darren Cahill, just like Halep did. So I'm looking forward to his future. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to be number one in the world in the next couple of years. He will absolutely win a Grand Slam, and I think he can win one next year. So props to Sinner.
Yeah.
Great guy. And he's going to improve so much.
We have to say, though, I mean, Novak.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah.
Seal the deal. Just greatest player of all time. What, eighth year finishing number one in the world.
It's crazy.
It's just absolutely bonkers. Seventh win at the ATP Finals, which is arguably the toughest tournament to win, beating everybody that you have to that's top eight in the world. Three Grand Slam championships, this major titles this year.
Yeah.
Loses just a heartbreaker. Maybe if he makes that, what's it, swinging volley
yep.
In the tiebreak mm-hmm. of Wimbledon, maybe he wins all four yep. again in a year. He's just the greatest player. His consistency at Grand Slam level, his number one ranking.
His ability to finish tournaments.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. He gets better the longer
tournaments
go. And
he gets better. Like, honestly, he gets better at the net. He's gotten better at the net over the last few years. I mean, he's serving and volleying. He's coming in. He made some unbelievable volleys on big points this week. His speed around the court is still second to arguably no one.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, he's probably on par with Alcaraz and I think Sinner as well as anybody has at his height. But there is just no weakness in his game. None.
Yeah.
Mentally, he's stronger than everybody. Physically, he's arguably as good as anyone, if not better than half of these guys. It's just unreal how much better he gets. I think he can do this for another 2 years.
Seems like it. I mean, the other thing that sort of strikes me watching Novak is just the unbelievable mental and sort of vision.
Mm.
Rare air that you have to live in where you're only just pushing yourself now
yeah.
because you've seen him in every context be compared to everybody else in the field. Obviously the other two he came up against, obviously all the young guns, and everybody's trying to make an interesting storyline out of this. And the truth is when he's at the height of his powers, he doesn't miss. And so there is such an interesting mental strength in the self-motivation it takes to be consistently the best, even when you're not getting pushed, which is not to say people didn't push him. Obviously he lost a match at this tournament. Obviously he lost a match in one of the finals of the Grand Slams this year. But I just, there's something like sort of Jordan-esque about kind of making your own records and holding yourself against
your own
performance.
He's,
and I think that's the context you have to view Novak in, at least at the end of this season, watching him win 3 out of 4 tournaments, where he's comparing himself to himself only.
Well, yeah, I mean, now he's breaking only his own records.
Right. That's kind of what I mean.
I would say that arguably these guys are pushing him. I think the Runas, the Sinners, and clearly the Alcarazes at Grand Slam level are absolutely pushing him.
Yeah.
To be better. And I think that's actually making him better.
Yeah.
Because now he knows, okay, they hit the ball as well as I do. They move as well as I do. Some of them serve as well as I do. Some of them move forward as well as I do. All of those things. So they're all trying to sort of emulate him in being as solid as he is in every aspect of the game.
Right.
But I think just the difference maker is the fact that... Sorry, I was like, what is going on? in my apartment. I think the difference maker with him is the mentality. Now he's knows that he can win. He doesn't doubt himself at any time in a match, whereas these guys are still learning to not doubt themselves in these moments.
Sure. And faith, so that's faith is one of the, you know, the most important tools we can possibly have, whether we're
faith in ourselves.
Faith in ourselves, yeah. And I think you just, you know, you see how powerful it is, not only for your own motivation, but it's such a demotivator for everybody else.
And you know, as a great player, and I can't even minutely put myself into Novak's brain or how good he is, but just like even in the small little time that, you know, for example, Lisa Raymond and I, we were going through a period there where we won a lot of tournaments in a row. We won 17 tournaments in like 2 years.
That's crazy.
And I remember Lisa and I saying to each other, when it got down to like 4-4 or 5-4 in the third, you know, it was close. There was one moment where we actually said to each other, look, we know that they feel like they've got to play extra special to beat us at this point.
And they did.
And I remember, I think she said it to me, and I remember thinking, yeah, you're right. And that's the difference when you're sort of zoning. I mean, he's been zoning for almost 20 years now. But when you get into that rarefied air of not losing a lot, you start to know that people think they've got to play actually better than they do. And you know, if you play at your 95%, which is what Novak does all the time, it's like they feel like they've got to play 110%.
Yeah. I mean,
and you can't do that. That's not possible. So when you learn, and I think that's what maybe Alcaraz learned when he played him at Wimbledon, he's like, look, if I play my best tennis, I have a chance. And so rather than try and play out of his skin, he kind of was comfortable playing his best tennis, and he was actually playing really well. But that's such a rare thing to be able to do in best of five sets. That's why these guys can beat him in two sets, you know, two out of three sets. But when it comes to five sets, God, thinking that you have to do that for three sets and play perfect tennis is really mentally hard, which is why it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is very similar to watching women walk out on the court already defeated playing Serena Williams, knowing she's got to have a bad day and I've got to have maybe a perfect day.
Yeah.
And that's so much pressure to do anything.
Yep.
I mean, think about going into like cooking dinner and thinking, I have to do this perfectly. I don't know that I could do, you know, like that's just the weight of that.
Whereas,
feeling.
You know, a great chef is like, just goes into the kitchen, doesn't think twice about it.
Right.
They just know. She's just like, I know I'm going to make the best pasta here.
Exactly. You know? And I think
Missy Robbins is walking into a restaurant, into a kitchen
into
with
Lilia,
you going, Caitlin,
I got this.
I know you can make some good pasta.
Yeah.
But I got you.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm going to beat you for sure.
And she will be right.
Anyway, so yeah, props to Novak.
Props to Novak. Now, what's amazing, truly, is that it is nearly Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for tennis. I'm thankful for Missy Robbins pasta. I don't know if I need any more tennis, but I'm going to get it. And so is Novak Djokovic because he's playing
and
Davis
Yannick
Cup. And Yannick Sinner and several others, our guy Andy Murray.
Sadly, no Dan Evans.
Sadly, no Dano.
Poor Dan, who was the MVP of the Team GB.
Him and his low socks.
Tore his Achilles. Maybe that's why.
Maybe.
Or his calf muscle, was it? His calf muscle.
I think he needs more protection on his legs.
Maybe he has those long socks.
Fabric.
Maybe I'm going to suggest that to him.
Okay.
He won't find that funny because he's got good calves, got a good tat on his calf, but I think it was his downfall. Short socks.
Listen, short socks.
We're kidding, Dan. We love you. We're really sorry that you're not going to be there. But I'm sure he's going to be there just to watch because he probably wants to be.
So Davis Cup starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
In Malaga.
Starts tomorrow. And we've got Canada versus Finland.
The reigning champs, Canada, and Felix Auger-Aliassime.
We would not have thought Finland would have been a country that would have been there. But
love it.
Props to Finland for being there. Of course, made up of Emil Ruusuvuori, our guy. He's had a great year. And Hellivaara. There's some really good players from Finland. So good luck to them against the defending champs in Canada. Your Canadians.
My Canadians.
Oh, Canada.
The Czech Republic is taking on Australia.
We're going to win that.
Feels likely.
Yeah.
Feels likely.
Yeah. Alex Dimonor is a heck of a Davis Cup player.
He is. And also they've got one of the best doubles players of all time in Matty Ebden.
Maddie Ebden. Can I just shout out one thing to Maddie Ebden? Oof, he missed a volley in the double semifinal to give them 5-3 break for his partner to serve for the first set. And it was the worst miss
That's
I've seen
we're
going to
talk
time.
About Matt Ebden? We're
I'm sorry.
Critique his
Maddie, you got to make that volley, mate. But I'm
sad.
Sure he'll know that. But okay. And then Italy, of course, Yannick Sinner going to play Davis Cup as well. Bloody hell, good effort from him.
They're playing the Netherlands.
And they have a real shot, clearly. And hey, listen, we might have a rematch of Yannick playing against Novak again.
That's insane to think before the end of the year they will have played three times in November.
2 weeks.
What?
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
2.5 weeks, 3 weeks.
That's assuming Serbia gets through Great Britain and our guy Andy Murray. I have to say I feel like it's likely that Serbia will get through Great Britain.
I'm thinking that it's likely that Novak Djokovic is not going to lose a match in singles or doubles.
What kind of shape is Andy Murray in right now? My understanding is not great.
The chances of Andy Murray beating Novak is 0%. And there's not been a better Davis Cup player than Andy Murray through the years.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be pretty tough for him to beat. I don't think he's even going to play. He's actually not even named in the team, Caitlin. I'm looking at the Great Britain team. It's Cam Norrie, Jack Draper, Liam Brody, Neil Skupski, and Joe Salisbury. And no Andy Murray.
Huh.
So well, we don't even have to worry about that.
Well, maybe he'll just be pulling at the heartstrings from the bench.
Maybe. I don't know. That is news to me. So anyway, it's Great Britain versus Serbia and Italy versus the Netherlands, Australia versus the Czech Republic, and Canada versus Finland.
And then for the love of God, can the season be over?
Oh, my God. The men play so late. It's ridiculous.
It's too bad. And then next month they're going to be having Exos in the Middle East.
I mean, literally at the end of October, they'll be done. Most players, just so people know, take most of the time a week off of playing tennis, sometimes two, a week off of working out, very rarely two, because that's very hard to get back into tip-top shape for the Australian Open, you know, and for the Australian summer, taking 2 weeks off. That's a lot of time. Most players actually go on holiday and still work out every day just because they know, oh my God, when I start working out again or playing tennis, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
So it is not a long break. So I don't know. Man, when you think about someone like Novak, this is a big ask for him to then roll up to the Australian Open. But chances are he probably won't play anything before the Australian Open like he usually doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need to.
Well, no, because he's playing this much tennis coming into it. But he's been very, very smart with his schedule. Look, he didn't play anything after the US Open until, you know what, a week before Turin. So, you know, these guys know how to do it in the end. And that's what something like Carlos Alcaraz is going to have to start figuring out. Because the one thing that I worry about him is the body is just, it's breaking down too much, Caitlin.
Agreed.
It just is.
Yeah.
For a 20-year-old.
For the kind of physical tennis that he plays where it's very speed and sort of shot-making based, I feel like, you know, he needs every bit of explosive.
He needs to calm the farm a little bit, I think.
Well, sure. But between the points, being 20 years old.
Yeah, he will.
You will, I think.
Yeah, when he starts getting older and going, I don't need to jump around like a jackrabbit all the time. But that is a bit of an issue. I think I'd be like, listen, and you know, you can't tell him don't run for every ball.
No, of course. That's like
actually what makes him so
Yannick
dangerous.
To take a match. Like you just, you know, champions are going to champion. That said, managing the body, managing the schedule, you know, being a little bit conservative maybe with when you put on the gas is necessary. Yeah. So we should wrap this up by saying this is not our last show of the year. We're going to do a very special.
Tis not.
Last show of the year that I think we should probably not send people to Instagram to learn about, or Twitter, certainly.
No.
I think they should subscribe to the newsletter.
Okay.
To get
subscribe
a very
to the newsletter.
Special invitation.
Also.
To a live podcast.
Await Renee's. I will post it as
you
well.
You will, okay.
On Instagram and on the all stories and all that sort of stuff.
Stay tuned. If you're in New York in December, we might have a very special holiday treat for you.
I did want to throw in a little fact that we talked about Medvedev losing his mind a little bit already, but also Zverev. Can we just give an update on that situation,
sure,
Caitlin?
Yeah, I have.
Because
I haven't
we haven't, you know, and a lot of people expect us to hold the ATP and certain, you know, journalists, you know, are sort of on the hook a little bit with this Zverev situation. It gets swept under the carpet, and I know a lot of our lady listeners would like us to sort of say, hey, what's going on with that?
Sure.
But he was found liable for his ex-girlfriend, who is the mother of his child. Would you like to update everybody on what happened there and why the ATP hasn't done or said anything along these lines?
Well, if I knew why the ATP hasn't done or said anything along these lines, I would be probably running the ATP because I would be able to answer for the fact that, you know, in any other league, having even just an accusation of domestic violence, much less two, which he has now faced, much less also getting tossed for attacking an umpire at an event in Acapulco.
Oh, that was so bad.
You know, would be enough to just be suspended from the tour. That's across all sports. Yeah. That's not just tennis. Yeah. It should be in tennis. Now he's reportedly been fined $475,000 by a German court after being issued a penalty for an abuse claim made by his ex-girlfriend. This is a different ex-girlfriend than the one that was reported.
Yeah,
in
this one's the mother of his child.
And Slate. This is a second woman who has accused him of domestic violence, and he has been issued a penalty for €450,000. And I understand he is appealing it. He's rejected all the allegations. But at this point, he's been found liable, it would seem. And again, the fact that this has been now a month of fallout from after this, and he's in ATP promo day, he's at the media circus, he's smiling in all the photos. It's sort of like, hey, do we take this seriously or do we not? And
yeah,
you know,
it's pretty bad.
It's not great. It's not a good look for tennis. It's not a good look for sports. It's not a good look for the ATP. And
no one's allowed to like talk to him about it. It's like he, you know, gives these statements, and it's like, listen, dude, if you are now credibly, I mean, this is basically,
he has been found liable.
Yeah, he's been found liable.
He can appeal it, you know, and I think it's maybe different than being found guilty in a criminal court, but being fined nearly $500,000,
Pretty much gave his prize money for the ATP finals to this.
Seems like a significant judgment. Again, I just don't know why his sponsors are standing by him. I don't know why the ATP is standing by him. I truly don't know why he's such a big draw. And again, like,
usually when there's smoke, there's fire.
It's tough to sort of look askance and sort of be like, you know, how is it that we as a sport are okay with this? There are other men who have been admitted, you know, some guilt with regards to some domestic situations. And it's just kind of like, do we take this seriously as a sport or do we not? And I think, you know, what I would like to sort of urge, as is not a new idea from me, but it's one we've talked about a lot. You either have a leadership structure or you don't. You either take the safety and security of your players, but also their coteries and the bodily safety of people involved in tennis seriously, or you don't. And I think, you know, the ATP
well,
is deeply...
there's a lot of women that watch tennis.
The ATP is deeply unserious.
Yeah.
Is what
when
I
it comes
to
that, there's absolutely no doubt. And just put the statement out a little bit more too, you know, like say whatever you need to say, but I just feel like they sweep it under the carpet and hope it just goes away. And it's not going away because now he's appealing. So it's going to be again in the spotlight again. So it's just like, I don't know. I feel it's just gross.
I can't imagine why we are still having to deal with this individual after this last more damning situation.
Listen, when you have now, this is twice that this has happened to you, and you know, you go ahead and you belt the living daylights out of an umpire's chair and virtually almost miss an umpire, you've got some issues. And so anyway, I just hope that they stop using him in posters. That's all I ask.
Yeah, that seems like particularly egregious to have his face smiling in all these media days and then read articles about him in German publications and sort of be like, what?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll end on that note.
We'll end on that note.
It's going to be the last show of the year. Stay tuned. Subscribe to the newsletter. Perhaps those of you who will be getting gifties for your loved ones will have the opportunity to get them in real life. You can meet
the illustrious Renee
Stubbs.
There's a
couple of things up our sleeve. So pay attention.
If you happen to be in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, tri-state area, maybe, you know, want to take a bit of a train ride in the old Manhattan area, we might
be here.
We might be doing something a little live. It's not 100% yet, but when it is, we will let you know, listeners.
Thank you for listening.
Hey,
listeners.
Guys, listen, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody.
I'm thankful for you, Renee.
I'm thankful for you, Caitlin.
Thankful for
and,
this podcast.
For
I'm
anyone out
for
there that's not thankful for us, we don't really care about
we
you.
We don't care. All right.
Bye, y'all. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.